from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkededIn, the place to be.
We're live with a Tolo Tuesday edition with our best audience of the show, the 6 a.m. Club. I'm Sean Sharif alongside Cowboys insider Bobby Belt. RJ Choppy is out this week on vacation. We got Pepe in the back live on the fan cam, Twitch, and YouTube. Good morning to Cam, Brady, Richard, and Gregory, along with Kevin Tolo on YouTube. Oh, Kevin Hagelin.
I just assume that's Kevin Hagelin.
Peyton, did you sleep? Are you 2 for 2 with the brand new $100 pillow that Zach Wilchuk cannot afford?
I am. I did wake up around 1 o'clock because the dog needed to go to the bathroom. But other than that, I mean, I've actually woken up the last two nights 10 minutes before my alarm's gone off. Like, I just wake up on the dot. 3:40, I wake up. My alarm's set for 3:50. I wake up and I'm like, maybe this is a sign that it's basically an alarm clock pillow.
Did you get a new dog, or you took one from your parents, or is it her dog?
It's Mackenzie's dog.
Okay.
So she'll get up and she'll go let her out.
And the dog sleeps with you?
Yes, sleeps in the bed.
What type of dog?
It's a rat terrier. It's like 20 pounds. Very small dog.
Okay.
But yeah, she'll sleep on Mackenzie's side of the bed, and so I don't get bothered by it.
Does the dog sleeping in the room make things difficult to have
No.
intimate time? No? You just put the dog in there?
The dog will go under the bed.
Yeah.
There's the dog knows. Because if you close the door and, you know, the dog barks. All right.
He's like, stop killing her.
Stop, Bobby. Stop. Why don't you figure out what Venom or Spider-Man actually is?
Oh, yeah.
Because yesterday on social media, I was going through the IG stories. I saw CeeDee Lamb with a circle around his. And I was like, all right, new workout photo. You know, what type of bulk, what type of lifting is CeeDee going to be showing off here? And he's putting on some type. He's not. He's showing some type of cartoon.
It wasn't a cartoon. It was an image from Spider-Man 3. It's the Peter Parker dark Spider-Man. I thought it was Venom. I was quickly corrected by a lot of people.
I thought it was Venom as well.
I was told by a lot of people, no, that's Dark Spider-Man. Get it together, you moron. And so I was like,
what's
all right,
the difference? Whatever. What's the difference in thought? What's the difference in message?
I don't know. I genuinely don't. I thought that's who that was in the third spot. I remember when Spider-Man 3 came out, I thought people said, oh, this one has Venom in it. And so that's how I remembered it, but I guess not. So it was just a Dark Spider-Man outfit in that movie where he had been.
Did you see that movie?
Yes, it's one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my life. Honestly, it was I like 0 out of 10, just cringy, awful. And I liked the first two.
Is this Toby Maguire?
Yeah, this is the one where he becomes emo Spidey. He like goes into the the jazz club and starts singing and dancing. Okay. It's a weird movie.
So you saw him, you saw the movie, but still didn't know the reference.
I just now discovered that, I knew the reference, I just discovered that wasn't Venom, is what I discovered. I had no idea that was
so
not him.
So in that movie, when he's putting on the black outfit, mm-hmm. is this him turning dark?
It's like a darker side of him, yeah. He's a negative side. Now, what I can't tell is that a picture of Peter pulling the mask over or pulling the mask off? I can't tell which one that is.
Okay.
It's an exposed face with his hands on the mask. But I can't tell if that's pulling it down or off.
Because first, you know, I thought one of two things. It's go time. Here we are, and he's just choosing the black outfit versus the red and blue outfit. It's go time. Contract is close. Or things about to get real, real ugly, and you're about to see the nasty, mean side of me come out. Those are the two options that I'm thinking right now.
Yeah, we already got people on the fan text saying Dark Spider-Man plays the heel, okay? And so because Dark Spider-Man plays the heel, CD's telling you that. I think you can be positive. I think there's a positive way to look at this. So if I were to say...
You wrote out a nice long bunch of theories.
I wanted to come up with some theories as to what this could mean because everybody was trying to figure it out on social media yesterday. So I got three reasons that it's about him getting an extension done. One, he posts the image up there. What did Uncle Ben tell Peter Parker famously? With great power comes great responsibility. So CD's basically letting us know that he's ready for the responsibility that's about to come with this fat contract extension that he's about to sign.
Yeah.
That could be what it means. Two, Spider-Man's identity is supposed to be a secret, but like he clearly shows us Peter's face, whether he's pulling the mask down or off. He showed us his face. This is clearly a nod to the fact that despite some hush-hush negotiations where we haven't been able to understand all the details, he's saying all will soon be revealed, just as Peter is right there. Huh. And then three, Spider-Man has recently gotten into all these multiverse themes and concepts. So I think this is basically CD saying, I'm about to own the Cowboys universe. I'm about to be the Cowboys universe's Spidey, and I'm about to join the other Spider-Men, I guess you would say, who have also gotten their deals done. So that's the positive angle.
Pepe, did you watch the series? You have any theory?
I've seen the first two, I think, Spider-Man, so I'm late on the others. But, I mean, I thought it was Venom as well. I'll admit it.
Now, when you say the first two Spider-Man, who was the star of them? Was it Tobey Maguire or Andrew Garfield?
I don't know the difference. Whoever was in the first one, Peter Pan. Yeah.
Was Emma Stone in the one you watched?
Yes.
Okay, that is not the first two. That's later. It also could be something bad, though, Sean. We can't discount the possibility of it being a negative.
All right.
So, one... Dark Spider-Man character from Spider-Man 3 was Peter leaning into his dark side, so CD is saying he's about to become a darker version of himself and abandon the Cowboys. Two, we all know the classic Spider-Man outfit. By sharing the dark Spider-Man suit, CD's accepting the fact that he's about to wear a different uniform than people have become accustomed to. I think that's a possibility. Three, Peter eventually had to defeat Dark Spider-Man because he was becoming a harm to himself, so obviously CD is saying that he doesn't like what the Cowboys have turned him into, and he's committed to defeating this part of him and moving on. Also, it might just be that he likes Spider-Man, and Spider-Man 3 in particular. I don't know.
Okay, well done. So that was CD Lamb yesterday on Instagram, 877-881-1053 for your theories on the Franklin Franco injury attorney text line. Let's get to some Raider leftovers from the second preseason game. Where's the Cowboys pass rush, and can Micah Parsons afford to do anything but rush the passer?
The pass rush is non-existent. The Raiders dropped back over 50 times in this game. How many quarterback hits did the Cowboys have?
Hits?
Yeah.
Two.
One. Half of that. Ugh. One quarterback hit. And I think the one quarterback hit was Albert Huggins, who was almost cut in the middle of the week because of, you know, pushing down the Rams assistant. But they're generating nothing in these games. Now, I know you don't have Micah Parsons. You don't have DeMarcus Lawrence. But last year, you were getting pass rush from Dante Fowler. You were getting pass rush from Dorrance Armstrong. Like, guys were generating pass rush from other spots. Right now, they're getting nothing in these games against second, third stringers in a lot of instances. They're generating nothing. Chauncey Golston not getting much. We talked about Huggins got a little bit of a push there, but Nyland, as well as he's played against the run, Nyland hasn't generated a lot of pass rush yet. It's going to be something where if you're talking about Micah and wanting to disguise him, which I know that's a big part of what Mike Zimmer wants to do. He wants to disguise what Micah's doing, not make him as predictable, be able to take advantage of blitz scenarios. The problem is going to become the downs you don't rush Mike, I don't know what you're going to be able to consistently generate. And so there reaches a point where it's like, regardless of the predictability, is Mike Zimmer going to have to find out what Dan Quinn found out, which is, I got to rush him regardless. Like, he's got to go because there's no other way that we're going to put pressure on the quarterback and be able to properly defend the pass if they've just got all day to stand back there, which that's what it's been. It has been all day. It's not like these teams are getting the ball out quick in these first two preseason games. It's guys standing back there for 5-6 seconds at a time, being able to scan the, you know, the defensive backfield and pick apart whatever they want.
No Sam Williams, of course. So that was a card on the house of cards that got put up there early. After Micah Parsons, the Dallas Cowboys top two sack collectors this year will be.
Oh, Lawrence, probably. And then
at what, five? What is that what he put up last year?
Yeah, probably something around there. 5-6. And then it might be, depending on what kind of opportunity, it might be Carl Lawson, who they just picked up off the street.
Oh my word.
If it's not Carl Lawson, it would be, I would guess it would be Osa from the three technique spot. But I mean, Osa's career high in sacks is what, three? So it's,
that's bad.
Yeah, I mean, this is reached
four. Tank had four last year.
Oh, okay. So it was even less than I thought. I thought you were telling me it was four for Osa. I was like, oh, he's better than I thought. But you're telling me Lawrence was actually worse.
Osa had three.
And that's the thing, is that Osa generates a lot of pressure, too. And then sometimes Lombardi will take this trek a lot of times. Sacks are overrated. You'll hear a lot of people say sacks are overrated. What you want is you want to generate pressure and force bad throws. I think there's something valuable about dropping somebody back 8 yards and also losing a down and creating more difficult situations to get the ball back. Especially for a defense like Mike Zimmer's, which is not going to be big on taking the ball away. And he's acknowledged they're not going to be very big on taking the ball away. But where the Cowboys pass rush is right now, this is why you've seen them add Al-Kadeen Muhammad, Shaka Tony, who was then released, Jordan Phillips, who, as much as we've talked about, hey, they needed a defensive tackle, his biggest skill set is pass rush. And so you've added basically four pass rushers now that you officially signed Carl Lawson yesterday. And I don't know where they're going to consistently generate it. And that's going to mean a lot of double teams for Micah if he's rushing every time.
And you said redemption for Albert Huggins, who shoved the assistant and gave the middle finger while being thrown out of the Rams scrimmage.
Yeah, so Huggins brought everything on himself. Like, there's no justification for what Albert Huggins did. We heard McCarthy talk about it last week. Everybody saw it, had their own takes on it, their own opinions. But as soon as you extend out your arms and, you know, make sure that you're pushing somebody to the ground and don't even turn back to check, and your first response is, let me flip them off, I'm not going to buy you when you say, oh, it was an accident, I didn't mean to do it.
Yeah.
So, reckless individual, like, you're competing for a job, you threatened your own job doing that. You then tried to act all innocent instead of owning up to it immediately.
Showed some nastiness, though.
Yeah, to the wrong person. I mean, that's like me picking on Peyton every morning. Like, I mean, what nastiness am I showing when it's Peyton? But then the game itself against the Rams, he was maybe the worst player on the football field against the Rams. I've never seen somebody that size get driven back 8 yards every single time. And he was. I mean, he was. In fact, I think my conspiracy theory is, my second one after the CD ones,
yeah,
is the thought that Mozzie Smith played terrible, I think, was people seeing a defensive tackle wearing 68 instead of 58, and they thought a lot of what they were seeing on the field was Mozzie. Because there were times I would look at it and I went, was that Mozzie? Oh, no, that was Albert Huggins again. Because it's just that six of that five could be a little tight sometimes. And so, but he coming back, bouncing back, showing an ability to get into this game, make plays, which he was driving the pocket more consistently than anybody else in this game when you want to talk about pass rush. I felt a little better about his ability to get to the passer, his ability to bounce back, show mental toughness, and bounce back from what was a really bad game in terms of showing any sort of power.
Speaking of Mozzie, he said his allergic reaction that forced him to miss the Raider game was to some milk.
Me too.
That he drank. He's had allergic reactions before, so he knew how to handle the situation. John Machota with the quote from Mozzie, I'm a big guy. I eat a lot of food. I know the ropes when it comes to having an allergic reaction. You can't panic. So is this lactose? Allergic reaction?
This sounds like it is. Like, for instance, I can't consume dairy without, like, my beard starts, like, flaking. Like, I get, like, eczema whenever I consume dairy.
So, like, pizza? Cheese, yeah, on the pizza?
Like, one time is not going to be a big deal. If I'm eating dairy consistently for a couple days, it'll start getting really irritated.
Well, weren't you trying to show me that you were, you know, shedding or whatever, the beard dandruff and Oxnard?
Oh,
eating,
yeah.
Something? What was it?
I think it was cheese. I think it was eating cheese on pizza or something like that. But no, this was like a legitimate I think that, like, there's an allergy here, not just an intolerance or a dairy irritant or a lactose thing. This is like he had an allergic reaction. Because I would hope they didn't hold him out of a game for a flaking beard. That would say a lot to me about where Mozzie Smith is as a player that I would hope isn't true.
Tolo Tuesday edition with a Cat Williams ticket giveaway.
Pimpin'.
In the 7 o'clock hour, the G-Bag Nation responding to the morning show.
Yeah, they did aggressively.
You were watching this live?
Yeah. Oh. I was sending y'all live updates. I was so into it. Lucia's taking some real shots, man.
At?
Pepe, back there.
See, I'm good friends with Lucius, man. That disappoints me. But
I know. How did Broadus and Bobby get turned into me and you catching the darts?
Oh, I know, man. Yeah, he's going to talk all the best about Wolchuk. As soon as Lucius pipes up, he's like, yeah, I like Lucius. Lucius is our friend. What are you talking about?
Ian Rappaport, NFL Network at 8 o'clock this morning. Brian Broadus from Oxnard and Nick Harris as well from DallasCowboys.com. But Corey Seager is not done yet. The starter has been named by Dan Quinn and Tua T with shots that I don't know if this coach will be able to respond from. The Tolo Tuesday edition of Sean and Bobby with the 6 a.m. Club. Just getting started on The Fan.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey, and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
So here's Seager with runners at second and third and one out. First pitch. Swinging a high fly ball to right field. McKinney's back on the track at the wall. He leaps out of here. A 3-run home run for Corey Seager. His second home run of the ball game, and the Rangers lead 4-0.
And for the first time since the White Sox series in July, the defending World Series champions have won consecutive games. Good morning, Metroplex. It's Sean and Bobby here on your home of the Rangers and Cowboys, 105.3 The Fan. All the scoring in this entire game was done in the first 4 innings. Corey Seager homered twice, drove in 4. Texas still finished with only 5 hits. Seager's 9 home runs in the month are tied for the major league lead with Miami's Jake Berger. He also went deep twice against the Massholes in Boston. And Kirby Yates rebounded from the first blown save of the season. Rangers beat Pittsburgh 4-3.
Boy, and Seager rocked that first one. It was like 450 feet. I mean, he absolutely destroyed that baseball.
13 of his team-high 28 homers have come against first pitches No surprise.
He is a first pitch hacker, just the way like Vladimir Guerrero used to be, where it was just like swinging at every single thing. Pablo Sandoval, Vladimir Guerrero. But it's funny. It's as much as he has that like aggressive. Yeah, I saw you looking for the bell. As much as he has the aggressive first pitch approach, I still think of him as a relatively patient player at times too. It's weird.
I was just thinking about that with the Vlad comparison. Vlad, we think of as undisciplined and sloppy and all over the place and just a hacker. But when Seager does it, all right, and the difference is in the swings too. Vlad was could do a 360 pirouette.
Looks like he's chopping down a tree.
Yes. So I think the difference is in the swings, but we think of Corey Seager as like a measured tactician when he does it, but Vladimir Guerrero was wild and out of control.
Yeah, and I mean it just feels like he just has a good feel and a good sense for like finding his pitch. Like he knows when he's going to get his pitch and he's going to take it. Not literally take it, but like take a swing. And so I mean he is absolutely one of the most like entertaining players in baseball today, and the way that like the kind of draw that he is, even like defensively.
Seager?
Like not like that he's good. I know he's got had his issues with like fielding percentages and other things like that, but even when you watch it, it's still like there's a smoothness to it at times. When you watch, it's watching him play baseball is as enjoyable to me as it has been watching other big time stars over there. It's just as enjoyable as watching Josh Hamilton at his peak to me.
Ooh. The excitement level in watching Corey Seager, I would vehemently disagree.
Really?
I don't know how thrilling of a player he is to watch, like in terms of flash. I think of flash.
I guess not flashy, but to me it's poetry almost watching him play the game. Yeah. And that's something that I really enjoy. Two more home runs. He becomes the fifth shortstop in Major League history with three seasons of 30 home runs or more. And that would be joining Miguel Tejada, Francisco Lindor, Ernie Banks, and Alex Rodriguez.
Watching Ortiz after the first one, like he immediately just looked down. Immediately like head down. I know that's gone. Corey Seager told the press as well yesterday that this season in some ways tougher than his first losing season here with the Rangers. Never had a losing season 7 years with the Dodgers. So right now, this is his second one ever in his career of losing more than winning.
Which it makes sense that this one would probably be more frustrating because of the high that you felt. You felt like, okay, I knew I was coming into something that I was going to have to rebuild. And I was going to have to do those sort of things. When you come here, you get the rebuild, you get to the top of the mountain, and then the next year you get your legs chopped out from under you. That's probably going to be like, I thought we were past this. I thought we'd move past
it. You know, we haven't played well. We thought we were going to play well. We thought we were loaded up, and we just have not played well.
I will say also the other thing about the 30 home runs, like I just mentioned, the wild thing to consider there when you realize he enters that group.
How funny is it? They sit there and show Corey Seager's two home runs. Next highlight, Vladdy Jr.
Yeah. Is Corey Seager missed 40 games last year? He missed a bunch this year. Like it's not like he's been completely available either while he's hitting these marks of 30 home runs. That to me is something. Corey Seager keeps me watching when they're not good. Like I'm gonna keep watching and staying engaged because I know I'm gonna see Corey Seager out there doing amazing things, and he's like one of the few draws I think that they really have right now.
Chris Young was on the G-Bag Nation. Since we are your home of the Rangers, they get the general manager, and KMC gets Boach. CY confirmed that Jacob DeGrom will make a rehab start for AA Frisco on Thursday, and he expects Jack Leiter to return to the Rangers, quote-unquote, relatively soon, added that Leiter may start or come out of the bullpen.
You know, there had been a growing thought. I wonder if it's like shifted at all after he's been back down to the minors, worked on some things. But I know Kylie McDaniel at ESPN and a lot of other people had settled on the idea they thought that Leiter was going to be a late-inning reliever. Like, that was eventually where he was going to end up. And that was really early on where people were making that projection. Like, after a year, they thought that he wasn't going to be a starter anymore. And you look at Kumar Rocker, who they drafted, and Rocker really quickly, a lot of people said, maybe he's a late-inning reliever guy. And it's like, man, that's the frustrating thing, is that if you tell me the Rangers finishing where they are, and then they get a really good draft pick next year. Two things are freaking me out about that right now. One, are they going to be willing to pay the money that the slot calls for? Or are they going to do like they've done in the past where they say, we're going to pick a guy who doesn't quite deserve to go here because we don't want to pay the full slot money? And the other part of this is that consistently these pitchers that they've picked at the top, you're now talking about two or three of their last big projections coming out as rotation guys. Immediately, everybody else in Major League Baseball starts saying, yeah, they're probably relievers, actually. I think they misevaluated them. And that's a troubling thing. The fact that they can't make it click with a guy like Cole Reagans, or the fact that, man, you may have misevaluated Leiter and Rocker, and it just seems like a historically bad run of luck.
Is it an historic? I hate that.
No, ahistoric, because it's not a vowel that the next one gets. It's a historically bad run of luck. Similar, their run with pitchers feels similar to me in terms of how are you this, how could luck even not get you there, as like the Cowboys not getting to an NFC title game in 30 years, where it just feels impossible to have that bad of luck.
For the seventh consecutive season, the Washington football team will have a new quarterback to start the year.
It was a process, and when that process was time, I'd know, he'd know, and I'd let you know. And as much as we knew Jaden would get there, Adam and I were most excited about watching how he would. And the how has been absolutely outstanding. He's ready, and he's earned the right to do that.
I'm going to trust Bobby on this with the draft evaluations on Jaden Daniels, but if I did not trust Bobby, the quotes, the articles, the comments coming out of Washington on Jaden Daniels are scary as a Cowboy fan and follower. Rare competitor. Daniels has been praised by teammates and coaches for his ball placement and accuracy, his work ethic, his poise in the pocket, and a personality that draws in teammates. Dan Quinn said Jaden has a mix of humility and swagger. And yesterday, Jaden Daniels, officially named the seventh consecutive different starting quarterback for the Commanders.
Yeah, I mean, when you have 6 years in a row with different quarterbacks.
All right, name them.
Okay, Jaden Daniels, Dwayne Haskins, what's his name? Sam whatever.
Howell.
Yeah, Sam Howell.
Good job. Hey, Sam Howell is the first quarterback to start every game for the team since Cousins in 2017. By the way, I don't even know. I'm trying to see if Haskins officially started a season. He had to have.
He did. Alex Smith, was he one?
Yep.
Colt McCoy, did he ever start one for them?
Did not start the year, at least in the last seven. Cousins, Alex Smith, Case Keenum.
Oh, I forgot Keenum was even there.
Heinicke.
Taylor Heinicke.
Yeah. It says Keenum played 8 games, then Haskins played 7. Then Alex Smith played 6. Haskins played 6. Did Dwayne Haskins never start game 1? There's no possible way. I'm looking on Wikipedia.
That's nuts if that's the case. The fact that he never would start. Now look, though, if you've gone 6 straight years with 6 different starting quarterbacks, you probably look at your team and start saying wild things like, maybe we just throw a running back out there. Maybe we just let him start, and maybe we figure things out from there. Maybe that'll change things up. And it's not a bad theory.
Who is the most throwy, quarterbacky type prototype in your mind between, you rank them, Hurts, Lamar, Daniels?
Probably that order. Hurts, Lamar, Daniels.
Hurts? Jaden Daniels is the least of the quarterbacks that you think of in your mind?
In terms of arm ability, yes. I did not like Daniels.
Oh my God, Dwayne Haskins played in 9 games in 2019 and then 7 games in 2020.
And it was just the back half of the year each time?
I don't know.
Oh.
he never played 10 games in a season for them?
Mm-mm. No, they moved on really fast.
Picked at 15.
He had...
Wow.
Was it Terry McLaurin? He had
poor Terry McLaurin.
He had a lot of issues on the sideline, button heads with guys in Washington.
All right. The Tua audio is insane. Sitting down with Dan Le Batard, I'm surprised the audio is not better. Maybe my computer is off. Hopefully not, because it's brand new. Well, but this is Tua discussing the difference between having Brian Flores as his head coach versus Mike McDaniel.
To put it in simplest terms, if you woke up every morning and I told you you suck at what you did, that you don't belong, doing what you do, that you shouldn't be here, that this guy should be here, that you haven't earned this right. And then you have somebody else come in and tell you, dude, you are the best fit for this. Like, you are accurate. You are the best whatever. You are this. You are that. Like, how would it make you feel listening to one or the other? You see what I'm saying? And then you hear it. You hear it, regardless of what it is, the good or the bad. And you hear it more and more. You start to actually believe that. I don't care who you are. You can be the president of the United States. You have a terrible person that's telling you things that you don't want to hear, or that you probably shouldn't be hearing. You're going to start to believe that about yourself. And so that's sort of like what ended up happening. And it was, I mean, it's basically been, 2 years of training that out of not just me, but, you know, a couple of the guys as well that have been here since my rookie year all the way till now.
Whoa. Yeah. To a T, who I like trust as much as I can from this far away, as a football human being, not only saying that Brian Flores was like psychologically damaging, he called him a terrible person, and this had to be coached out of multiple Dolphins over the past 2 seasons. I'm never hiring Brian Flores again as my head coach based off this.
Yeah, this is the stuff that was whispered around about Brian Flores that
I had a former player who was there tell me this as well.
Yeah, this was the stuff that when he was making the claims of discrimination that made it hard for me to like go with, because it's like I knew there were too many opinions around the league of people who were like, he's an ass. Like, he's really difficult. He's got the same Belichick like mentality that Patricia and others have tried to like drive into their cultures, that players start going like, what the hell is wrong with you, dude? I had one person in the league telling me Miami was the most toxic culture in the NFL while he was there. I know somebody else, and I know an agent in the NFL who was essentially banned from the facility by Brian Flores, and the Dolphins had to step in and go, you can't ban him. You don't get to ban him from walking in the doors. And so Flores was, he had these sort of problems and this sort of prickly personality that this sounds about in line with some of the stuff that we heard, and makes sense why the Dolphins would have moved on.
The G-Bag Nation responds to the morning show. Mm. The audio, take cover for some of us in the room. Next on 105.3 The Fan. A Cat Williams ticket giveaway just around the corner. We tell you this now because we want you to win it in the 6 a.m. club. Thank you for watching. If you are on YouTube, Twitch, and the fan cam as well, Sean Sharif, Bobby Belt with you for a Tolo Tuesday. RJ is out this week in Michigan golfing. We got Peyton in the back, and thank you. You are appreciated.
You're appreciated.
You are not appreciated, Brian Broaddus, with your stupid little impression of me yesterday while joining us during Below the Belt. And apparently, Broaddus won G-Bag of the Day for this.
Sean, where did you come down after listening to our conversation?
I thought that...
This is going to be fun. I was thinking you two need to fight more on these shows.
No, I was hoping the
two
fight
idiots
was,
going at it. I was not hoping, very strong.
I was hoping the fight was worse. It wasn't that bad.
Yeah, exactly.
Bad.
You were hoping that you'd have to talk to me and go, hey, I'm thinking about posting this. What do you think? What do you think? No, I'm thinking about for the ratings here.
Yeah.
You and Bobby would like, if you met with each other and like hit each other in the face, that would be better. I'm cooking a brisket. What do you think?
Oh,
I'm using my thermopin and some foil.
Send this over for G-Bag of the Day.
I'm making a boat out of the foil. I'm making beef tallow while I'm doing it.
Wow.
I use the beef tallow from some beef stroganoff I'm thinking about later. Who you liking at quarterback, Broaddus? I hate everybody you like anyway. Sometimes you're a little bitch when it comes to this stuff.
Oh. Wow. Now, for the record, let it be known that after Bobby Belt, the number two person in this building who calls me and talks to me about ratings all the time is Brian Broaddus. Let me also add, he wants to make me out to be this ratings whore. We're not the show that acts like Fear Factor with a blender.
Can I say that kind of slurly?
Oh, yeah. Chugging vodka, eating cottage cheese and raw eggs combined together. So they're the ones pimping themselves out for any type of ratings. Broaddus cares about them. Second most in the building. I was impressed. You could tell he's a Meat Church fan and a Hurtado fan. The foil boat, man, that blew me away. That was impressive. The foil boat, the thermopen, and then whenever someone used the word stroganoff, I chuckle.
Beef tallow.
Matt Pittman tomorrow with a humongous, humongous announcement, by the way, at 8:20 here on Sean and RJ.
And then he drops that B word at the end. You know, you're a little B when you talk about these things.
That's right.
I did like, he made you sound like you're some 1920s East Coast individual. Though, when he goes, the ratings here.
Yeah, here.
I was like, that's not how you talk.
Cavs are here. Cavs are here. So yesterday, the G-Bag Nation decided to replay some of the audio. Bobby versus Broadus post-game fight, post-game disagreement over Trey Lance and his performance against the Raiders. And even before playing the audio, this is G-Bag talking about the stubbornness of my co-host.
When you were listening to me and Bobby go at it, who did you feel like made a better point?
I leaned towards your side on this one. However... Okay.
Bobby made a good point. I mean, he made good points.
I thought Bobby did. And Bobby did, and this was prior to that even happening, he did select Trey Lance as the player of the game. So it wasn't as if, you know, Bobby just completely didn't want to give Trey Lance any credit. I do feel this way about Bobby sometimes, and I know that this really ruffles his feathers, but that he can get kind of dug in and stubborn on a certain topic.
Sure.
So
We all can.
You know, the Trey Lance thing.
Not just the Dak one?
The Dak one, I think, is number one.
Yeah, right?
That's number one by far.
That's number one.
Yeah.
The Lance thing, this one's a little bit less because Lance, he did acknowledge that Lance had a better game and he gave him player of the game.
I like Zach saying, I know this ruffles his feathers, but yeah, that's exactly what he is. He's stubborn and he digs in. I don't need to dig in on Dak Prescott, you guys, because Dak Prescott just does what he does. I don't have to dig in on that. That's just... That's a great quarterback, and I can objectively look at it that way.
Okay, well, keep talking next year. We'll see what uniform he's wearing. It's funny, hours later, then Broadus says, he made good points. Oh, really? And then Zach hits him with the fact, that's a hell of a fact, Bobby named Trey Lance the player of the game before their disagreement in the post-game show, and then Broadus, we all can just be dug in. Oh, kumbaya. And then after hearing the audio from the postgame show, Gavin Dawson coming to Roberto's defense.
Well, he's just saying like one better game, one afternoon of better execution doesn't make you a significantly better player.
He called him an awful NFL quarterback. He called him not an NFL quarterback.
I would say that's accurate, Brian. First of all, though, I want to salute you for doing some.
What a technique. That is if I was at Pat Doty Sportscaster Camp, talking to the kids, I'd play that clip and say, this was perfect technique. Dawson disagreed, kind of went hard at him, and then quickly said, but I want to give you props. Play that again, Peyton. Kids, if you're listening, Pat Doney, play this next year during the seminar. I thought we were about to have a volcano. I thought we were about to have another another eruption, but Gavin Dawson, he's too smooth for that.
He called him an awful NFL quarterback. He called him not an NFL quarterback.
I would say that's accurate, Brian. First of all, though, I want to salute you for doing some terrific content, man. I thoroughly enjoyed that.
I thought it was great.
But I think he's more just kind of sticking to his guns than digging in, because you're going to need to see him do that against NFL starters to feel like, okay, this is a guy that could, you know, execute. I'm not even sure if, you know, NFL backup is in his future. And when you acknowledge that the guy's not accurate, Brian, I would say, isn't that like the most important thing as a quarterback? And if he's never going to be accurate, then you also agree that he doesn't have the skill set to get it done at this level.
Good point.
Dawson was doing everything you said you wanted me to go at Brian with. I was just like, all right, well, you just acknowledge this, do this. Dawson came with it. I was surprised he decided to enter the fray.
Hard for Broadus to stand on a solid 2 feet when he goes, all right, I'll give you this. He's not accurate. All right. I'll give you this about our fight we're having over this pitcher. He doesn't throw strikes. You win there. But, and then it's hard to follow up with any type of but after that. And, you know, I don't like nice Broadus as much as I like petty Broadus back in the day. But back in the day, Broadus, I could be like, hey, this individual, maybe even, you know, someone in the sports journalism field in this city. I had a nice interaction with him. He seems to put out some good content. And Broadus would be the first one. Don't fall for that crap. This guy, this is a... So his overall opinion was not going to be swayed by one day of good performance. And that's what the point that Bobby was trying to make was. One nicer game from Trey Lance was not going to go ahead and alter things too much.
He didn't, like you said yesterday during Crosstalk, he didn't want to hear the but. He just wanted me to say Trey Lance was better tonight and just leave it at that.
Yep.
And it was like I need to give context here. And that's what I gave. And it frustrated him.
And then Gavin Dawson pressing brought us just a little bit more, seeing how far he can take it on Trey.
If he goes out in preseason game 3 and plays against second and third stringers, but 4.9 air yards per attempt.
He's got no choice. Yes. He's got no choice.
So when you don't have a choice, we don't have a sample size of him against number ones for 2 years now because the Cowboys wouldn't put him on the field last year. So you can't say, well, he didn't play against ones, so we'll take what he did against twos and threes and assume that's going to happen against ones? Ooh. Is that what you're suggesting we do?
I'm suggesting that at least to me, I'm going to give him the opportunity because, again, talking to guys around the league, when you say, okay, who would you not want to have to prep against? You know, everybody's saying, well, you don't want to play against a guy that's kind of a dual threat player.
If we were going into an NFL game and Dak was hurt, would you say, let's go with Trey Lance?
Mm. I think I would.
Instead of Cooper Rush.
How many times? I've done shows with you, Dawson, and you've talked about the running quarterback. Stop. And Dak being the...
It sounds like Broadus is trying to use Oxnard voice there. He's out on the court. But Dawson's going at him.
He is.
Does this happen regularly? I listen to KMC on the way home a lot more than G-Bag, obviously, right after the show, but... This is impressive from Gavin.
Dawson usually likes to kind of orchestrate these moments, I feel like. He doesn't always jump in on his own. I think he heard us going back and forth for 4 minutes, and it juiced him up a little bit. It got him going, and so he wanted to dive in.
Someone got to Brian on that Gang of Seven. This whole who would you least want to prepare for, that's a tricky statement.
Yeah.
Who's the better thrower? Who is going to beat you if you drop back 30 times? Cooper Rush or Trey Lance? The easy, duh answer is Cooper Rush. That right there is the guy that you don't want to be the backup if you're facing them. Not like, who's a bigger headache? Okay, I got to spend a little bit more time on the run. I got to spend a little bit more time on his leg usage and, you know, some of the boots or some of the movement things. Who's the better thrower 25 or 30 times a game? And we know that it's Cooper Rush. So I'm surprised. Brian brought us on the record. He would want Trey Lance as the two. If something happened to Dak, let's finish up with that clip.
I've done shows with you, Dawson, and you've talked about the running quarterback.
Yes.
And Dak being the running quarterback. And now we're talking about a pocket quarterback. You know, I mean, it seems like to me you're kind of leaning out, oh, no, we need pocket quarterbacks now.
No, well, I mean, that's how we're going to.
Forever,
that's
forever,
all we can evaluate
you,
him off
forever,
of.
No,
you're
I
right.
You.
You're
you
right.
Know, I was always
I
like,
mean, if you tell me we're going to come into this game and run Trey Lance 15 to 20 times, I'm in. You know, based on what I've seen in the preseason, I don't want him playing in the pocket as a quarterback.
Oh. Woo. Oh, Gavin Dawson.
Dawson coming in pretty strong, man.
Get Gavin to co-host in here Thursday and Friday. Get him in here for the firehouse tour out in Sachse.
I'll
see you in Oxnard, sir.
You could kind of see it on his face while he was listening to the audio. Dawson does enjoy the back and forth, and I think he just... It got him a little primed. It's like, you know, you hit the little primer before you start the lawnmower or whatever. It's just he got primed a little bit, and he was ready to go, and I think... Broadus was a little caught off guard. I don't think he expected right and left hooks coming out of that clip from Gavin Dawson.
Yes. 877-881-1053. So I think Broadus has taken two losses now. I think that's 0-2 for Double B. First against our Double B and then against GD. Sean and Bobby, Choppy out this week. Y'all judge it on the scorecard on YouTube, the fan cam, and Twitch at 877-881-1053. How is the Cowboys 53-man roster looking right now? The toughest decisions to make? Bobby has his updated 53 and a Cat Williams ticket giveaway for you. Turning it on, leaving it on after this.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, But with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.